Chapter 10. The Four Focuses of History Makers. The life given us by nature is short, but the memory of a well-spent life is eternal. Cicero. The sunrise was dazzling as the entrepreneur and the artist walked hand in hand along the seashore to meet the billionaire at the designated meeting spot for the next morning's mentoring class. Mr. Riley was already there when they arrived, sitting on the sand, eyes closed in a deep meditation. He was shirtless, wearing camouflage-patterned shorts similar to the ones the Spellbinder styled the day he appeared on the beach, and a pair of rubber diving booties with smiley face emojis scattered over them. You would have been more than amused if you saw him in them. An assistant rushed out of the billionaire's home the instant he raised a hand toward the heavens, displaying the universal victory sign. Three crisp pages of paper were efficiently extracted from a shiny black leather satchel and handed to the titan of industry without a word being exchanged. Stone Riley simply offered a slight bow of appreciation. In turn, he gave a sheet to each of his two students. It was exactly 5 a.m. The billionaire then picked up a seashell and skipped it across the water. It appeared as if he had something profound on his mind this morning. Gone were the usual lightheartedness, festivity, and awkward antics. "You okay?" inquired the entrepreneur as she touched a bracelet engraved with the words, "Straight on hustle, rise and grind, I'll sleep when I'm dead." The tycoon read the words on the bangle. He placed a finger under his lips. "Who will cry when you die?" he asked.
"What?" exclaimed the artist.
"What will those who know you whisper about how you lived once you're no longer here?" The billionaire articulated the question in the manner of a skilled actor. "You live as if you were destined to live forever. No thought of your frailty ever enters your head. Of how much time has already gone by, you take no heed. You squander time as if you drew from a full and abundant supply. Though all the while, that day which you bestow on some person or thing is perhaps your last."
"Those are your thoughts? Brilliant," stated the artist.
The billionaire looked mildly embarrassed. "I wish. No, they belong to the Stoic philosopher Seneca. They came from his treatise on the shortness of life." "So why are we talking about death on this beautiful morning exactly?" queried the entrepreneur, appearing a little uncomfortable.
"Because most of us alive today wish we had more time. Yet we waste the time we have. Thinking about dying brings what matters most into much sharper focus. You'll stop allowing digital distraction, cyber diversions, and online nuisances to steal the irreplaceable hours of the blessing called your life. You never get your days back, you know," said the billionaire in a friendly but firm fashion. "I reread Chasing Daylight yesterday after my meeting in town. It's the true story of high-powered CEO Eugene O'Kelly, who was informed he had only a few months left to live when his doctor discovered he had 3 brain tumors."
"So what did he do?" asked the artist softly.
"He organized his last days with the same commitment to orderliness he ran his business life by. O'Kelly tried to make up for the school concerts he'd missed, the family outings he'd passed up, and the friendships he'd forgotten. In one part of the book, he shared how he'd ask a friend out for a walk in nature, and that this was sometimes not only the final time we would take such a leisurely walk together, but also the first time."
"Sad," was the contribution of the entrepreneur as she nervously played with her bracelet. The worry lines on her forehead reappeared in full blazing glory.
"Then last night I watched The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, one of my favorite movies," the billionaire continued. "It's also a true story about a man who was also atop the world, an editor-in-chief of French Elle magazine. Jean-Dominique Bobby had it all, and then suffered a stroke that left him unable to move any muscle in his body, except for his left eyelid. The condition's called locked-in syndrome. His mind still worked perfectly, but it was as if his body was encased in a diving bell, totally paralyzed."
"Sad," said the artist, echoing his companion.
Get this, added Mr. Riley. His rehabilitation therapists taught him a communication method called silent alphabet, which allowed him to form letters of words by blinking. And with their help, he wrote a book about his experience and the essential meaning of life. It took him 200,000 blinks, but he completed the book.
I have nothing to complain about, the entrepreneur said quietly.
He passed away shortly after the book was published, the billionaire kept on. But the point I'm trying to offer with all this is that life is very, very fragile. There are people who will wake up today, take a shower, put on their clothes, drink their coffee, eat their oatmeal, and then be killed in a motor vehicle collision on their way to the office. That's just life happening. So, my advice to you two special human beings is not to put off doing whatever it takes to express your natural genius. Live in a way that feels true to you, and pay attention to the small miracles every day brings.
I hear you, commented the artist, as he tugged a dreadlock and fidgeted with the Panama hat he'd chosen to wear for this morning's coaching session.
I do too, stated the entrepreneur somberly.
Enjoy every sandwich, added the artist.
Very wise insight, said Mr. Riley.
It's not mine, the artist replied sheepishly. They're the words of songwriter Warren Zevon. He spoke them after he discovered he was terminally ill.
Be grateful for every moment. Don't be timid when it comes to your ambitions. Stop wasting time on insanely trivial things and make it a priority to reclaim the creativity, fire, and potential that is dormant within you. It's so important to do so. Why do you think Plato encouraged us to know thyself? He understood intimately that we have vast reservoirs of ability that absolutely must be accessed and then applied in order for us to lead energetic, joyful, peaceful, and meaningful lives. To neglect this hidden force inside of us is to create a breeding ground for the pain of potential unused, the frustration of fearlessness unembraced, and the lethargy of mastery unexplored. A kite surfer whizzed by, and a school of crown squirrelfish sailed through the water that was as clear as Abe Lincoln's conscience. This brings us beautifully to what I wanted to walk you through this morning. Please look carefully at your sheet of paper, the billionaire instructed. The learning model the two students saw, the four focuses of history makers, is reproduced on the enhancement. History maker focus number one, capitalization IQ. The mogul explained the concept of capitalization, developed by eminent psychologist James Flynn. The valuable insight he conceived is that what makes a legendary performer so good isn't the amount of natural talent they are born into, but the extent of that potential they actualize and capitalize. Many of the finest athletes in the world, Mr. Riley observed, had less innate skill than their competition. But it was their exceptional dedication, commitment, and drive to maximize whatever strengths they had that made them iconic. It's not the size of the dog in the fight, it's the size of the fight in the dog insight, declared the billionaire as he rubbed his chiseled abdominals absent-mindedly and put on a new pair of sunglasses, the kind you'd see on a surfer in Southern California. The spellbinder taught me early on that by joining the 5 a.m. club, I'd have a gorgeous window of opportunity every morning to cultivate my highest assets, take some time for myself, and do the preparation needed for me to make each day a tiny gem. He helped me understand that successful people use their mornings well, and that by rising before daybreak, I'd win a primary victory that would set me up for a triumphant day. I never seem to have any me time, interjected the entrepreneur. My schedule's always so full, she repeated. I'd love to have a block in the morning to recharge my batteries and do some things that would make me a happier and better person. Exactly, remarked the billionaire. So many of us lead time-starved lives. We absolutely need to have at least an hour first thing in the morning to refuel, grow and become healthier, more peaceful people. Getting up at 5 a.m. and then running the 20-20-20 formula, which you'll soon learn, will give you an extraordinary head start on your days. You'll be able to concentrate on high-value activities instead of letting your day control you. You'll experience energy you never knew you had. The joyfulness you'll reclaim will blow you away, and your sense of personal freedom will totally soar. Mr. Riley then turned around to display a temporary tattoo on his muscled back. It bore a quote by French philosopher Albert Camus that read, "The only way to deal with an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion." Below these words, on the industrialist's back, was an image of a phoenix rising from the flames. "I so need this," the entrepreneur said. "I know my productivity, gratefulness, and calmness would improve so much if I had some personal time every morning before it all gets so hectic."
"Me too," said the artist. "An hour to myself every morning to reflect and prepare would be a game changer for my art and for my life."
"The Spellbinder taught me early on that investing 60 minutes in developing my best self and my greatest skills during what he called the victory hour would transform the way the rest of my life unfolded mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually. He promised it would give me one of those gargantuan competitive advantages we discussed yesterday, and lead to the formation of absolute empires of creativity, money, joy, and helpfulness to humanity. And I need to say he was completely right." "Anywho," chirped the billionaire, "back to the concept of capitalization and the importance of intelligently exploiting whatever primal gifts you've been given. Too many among us have bought into the collective hypnosis that those with extraordinary skill are cut from a different cloth and have been divinely blessed by the gods of exceptional talent. But that just ain't so," observed the billionaire, a wisp of his farm boy manner emerging. "Dedication and discipline beats brilliance and giftedness every day of the week. And A players don't get lucky, they make lucky. Each time you resist a temptation and pursue an optimization, you invigorate your heroism. Every instant you do that which you know to be right over the thing that you feel would be easy, you facilitate your entry into the Hall of Fame of Epic Achievers." The billionaire stared at a gigantic seagull clutching its slimy breakfast. He then released a loud burp. "Oops, so sorry," he spoke in the tone of apology. "As I mentioned earlier, a lot of the latest research emerging on successful people is confirming that our private story about our potential is the key performance indicator on whether we actually exploit that potential." "What do you mean?" requested the entrepreneur as she stopped taking notes on her device to look into the eyes of the billionaire, who had now put on a tight t-shirt that read, "Victims have big TVs. Leaders own large libraries." "Well, if you're running a mental narrative that says that you don't have what it takes to be a superb leader in business or an acclaimed expert of your craft, then you won't even start the adventure of getting there, will you? And world-class is a process, not an event. Running a limiting psychological program that says everyday people can't become great or genius is born, not developed, will cause you to think it would be a complete waste of time to do the studying, put in the practice hours, and prioritize your days around your heartfelt desires. What would be the point of investing all that labor, vigor, and time, and making all those sacrifices when virtuoso-level results are impossible for someone like you, under your belief system? And then, because your daily behavior is always a function of your deepest beliefs, that very perception of your inability to realize victory becomes real," noted the billionaire. "Human beings are hardwired to act in alignment with our self-identity. Always. You'll never rise higher than your personal story. Important insight there." He then peered out into the ocean at a small fishing boat with a net strewn across the end of it. A fisherman in a red shirt was smoking a cigarette as he navigated the vessel away from some dangerous coral reef. The billionaire mumbled another mantra to himself. "I am grateful, and I am forgiving. I am giving. My life is beautiful, creative, productive, prosperous, and magical."
Then he continued the discussion around capitalization. The positive psychologists call the way we embrace a story about who we are and what we can achieve, and then behave in a way that makes that fantasy actually come true, the self-fulfilling prophecy. We subconsciously adopt a thinking pattern by learning it from the people who most influence us at an early age. Our parents, our teachers, and our friends. Then we act according to it. And since what we do creates the results we see, this generally faulty personal story becomes a reality of our very own causing. Amazing, right? But that's how most of us operate through the best years of our lives. The world is a mirror, and we get from life not what we want, but that which we are.
And I guess that the more we accept that core belief about our inability to produce excellent results in whatever it is we hope to do, the more we not only reinforce it so it becomes a trusted conviction, but we also deepen the behavior that's associated with it so it becomes a daily habit, recited the artist, sounding professorish instead of bohemian in the pure morning air.
Wonderfully said, replied the billionaire excitedly. I love the trusted conviction idea. That's good. You should share that phrase with the Spellbinder if you see him today. I think he's out fishing, but knowing him, he'll be getting some sun here on this beach later in the morning. The billionaire continued. Every human being has an instinct for greatness, a hunger for the heroic, and a psychic need to rise toward the heavens of their finest capability, whether we remember this consciously or not. A lot of us have been minimized and pushed down so much by the dark and toxic influences around us, we've forgotten all we truly are. We've become masters of compromise, slowly and steadily allowing in more aspects of mediocrity, until a point arrives where it's our standard operating system. Real leaders never negotiate their standards. They know there's always room to improve. They understand that we are most connected to our sovereign nature when we are reaching for our best. Alexander the Great once said, "I am not afraid of an army of lions led by a sheep. I am afraid of an army of sheep led by a lion." The billionaire inhaled audibly. A butterfly fluttered by, and a crab scampered past him. "I'm here to remind you," he carried on, "that each one of us holds a profound capacity for leadership within us. And as you now know, I'm not speaking of leadership in the sense of having a title, a lofty position, or needing some formal authority. What I'm referring to is so much more weighty and exquisite than that. It's the true power inside a human heart, versus the transitory power delivered by a big office, a fast car, and a large bank balance. What I'm speaking of is the potency to do work that is so great. We just can't take our eyes off you. The capability to create massive value in your marketplace. The capacity to impact and disrupt an entire industry. And the power to live with honor, nobility, audacity, and integrity, so that you fulfill your opportunity to make history in your own original way. Doesn't matter if you're a CEO or a janitor, a billionaire or a ditch digger, a movie star or a student. If you are alive today, you have the ability to lead without a title and make your mark on the world, even if you don't currently believe you can due to the limits of your current perception. Your perception isn't reality. It just isn't. It's just your current perception on reality. Kindly remember that. It's simply the lens you happen to be looking at reality through at this moment of your ascent toward world class. Makes me think of the words of the German philosopher Arthur Schopenhauer, who wrote, "Most people take the limits of their vision to be the limits of the world. A few do not. Join them." So there's a large difference between reality and our perception of reality, right? Inquired the entrepreneur. It seems from what you're saying that it's almost as if we see the world through a filter that's made up of all our personal programming. And we run the program so much, we get brainwashed into believing that the way we are seeing the world is real, right? You've got me rethinking the way I see everything now, she admitted, as the skin on her forehead scrunched together like a rose contracting in the cold. I'm beginning to question so much, she went on. Why I started my business in the first place, why social status is so important to me, why I have such urges to eat in the sleekest restaurants, live in the best neighborhoods, and drive the most stylish cars. I think part of the reason I've been so crushed by the takeover attempt at my company is because I get my identity as a human being from being the founder. Honestly, I've been so busy driving my career. I haven't stopped for gas in terms of really thinking things through and living intentionally. And it's like the three-step success formula you taught us yesterday. As I develop better daily awareness around myself and why it is that I do what I do, I'll make the better daily choices that will give me better daily results. The entrepreneur was unstoppable. I have no clue what my authentic values are, what I want to represent as a leader, why I'm building what I'm building, what really makes me happy, and how I want to be remembered when I'm no longer here. The story of that CEO and the stroke of that editor really spoke to me. Life really is super fragile. And now that I'm speaking so openly, I think I've been spending many days chasing the wrong things, stuck in the noise of complexity instead of hearing the signal of those top value pursuits in my career and in my private life that would really make a difference. And I think about the past a lot, what happened to me in my childhood. I also haven't had any time for any friendships. I have no real passions. I've never watched the sun rise until now, and I've never found true love, said the entrepreneur as she anxiously rubbed her bracelet. The entrepreneur looked over to the artist. Until now, tears filled his eyes. Trillions of planets in this universe, he pronounced. Billions of people on our planet, and I was fortunate enough to meet you. The entrepreneur smiled and then proceeded to respond in a gentle tone. I hope I never lose you. Don't be too hard on yourself, interjected the billionaire. We're all on our paths, know what I mean? We're all exactly where we need to be to receive the growth lessons we're meant to learn. And a problem will persist until you get the education it showed up to bring. And I do agree with you that human beings have a tragic habit of remembering the things it would be smart to forget and forgetting the wonderful things it would be wise to remember. Anywho, I do understand you. Please, just trust that the highest and wisest part of you is leading you. There are no accidents on this path to legendary and the making of a life that matters. And if you ask me, there's nothing wrong with magnificent homes, fast cars, and lots of money. I really, really need you to hear me on that, please. We are spiritual beings having a human experience. As the old saying goes, having plenty of money is what life wants for you. Abundance is nature's way. There's no scarcity of flowers, lemon trees, and stars in the sky. Money allows you to do superb things for yourself and for the people you care most about, and it offers you the chance to help those in need. A tourist water skiing behind a speedboat zoomed by. You could hear him laughing with glee. I'll let you in on a little secret, the magnate continued. I've given away most of my vast liquid fortune. Yes, I still have the jets and the Zurich flat and this oceanside place. And though my business interests are still valued at an amount that makes me a billionaire, I need none of it. I'm not attached to any of this.
I read a story that I think you'll like, shared the artist. Kurt Vonnegut, the writer, and Joseph Heller, the author of Catch-22, were at a party hosted by a renowned financier on Long Island. Vonnegut asked his companion how it felt to know that their host made more money in the day before the gala than he had made from all royalties of his best-selling book. Heller replied, I've got something he can never have. Vonnegut asked, What on earth could that be, Joe? Heller's reply was priceless. The knowledge that I've got enough.
Brilliant, enthused the billionaire. Love it. He shouted inappropriately loudly as he high-fived the artist. He then performed the little dance he loved to do when he was happy yet again, before launching into a series of jumping jacks. His eyes were closed as he did them. Such an oddball. The artist went on talking.
Anyway, I understand what you're teaching us on this point about capitalization and the self-fulfilling prophecy. No one will believe in our ability to do great things until we first believe in our greatness, and then put in the sincere and rigorous effort to realize it. You know what Pablo Picasso once said?
Tell us, please, implored the entrepreneur, her stance showing that she was very open in this instant.
Picasso announced, My mother said to me, if you are a soldier, you will become a general. If you are a monk, you will become the Pope. Instead, I was a painter and became Picasso.
Gnarly, man, the billionaire remarked. Now that's faith and confidence in one's potential.
The billionaire ran a fist along his tanned chin, looking down at the white sand for a moment.
And it's not only our parents who are responsible for the limited programs most people are running through their minds during the finest hours of their greatest days. Like I suggested, many well-meaning yet unaware teachers reinforce the idea that the heroic geniuses of the arts, sciences, sports, and humanities are special, and that we need to accept that we are ordinary, incapable of producing towering work that leaves people breathless by its excellence and generating a life that is matchless. And then we have the association of our friends and relentless messaging of the media supporting the same facts. Essentially, it all becomes this consistent hypnotization where, without us even knowing it, the once blazing fire of genius within us grows dimmer, and the once passionate voices of possibility get quieter. We minimize our abilities and begin a lifelong process of playing small with our powers and constructing prisons around our strengths. We stop behaving as leaders, creative producers, and possibilitarians, and we start acting as victims.
Disappointing what happens to so many good people, and most of us can't see this brainwashing away from our best selves happening, reflected the entrepreneur.
Yep, responded the billionaire. Even worse, the potential unexpressed turns to pain. I need to emphasize. What do you mean by that? Wondered the artist, turning his eyes away and shifting his posture somewhat nervously. Maybe I'm sabotaging creating art as original and exceptional as the great masters did, because I've avoided capitalizing on my potential for so long that I'm hurting deep inside, the artist thought to himself.
Well, our noblest selves know the truth. Each of us are built to do astonishing things with our human gifts and materialize astounding feats with our productive talents. The word astonish is actually derived from the Latin word extenere, which means to leave someone thunderstruck. Every single person alive today carries the capacity deep within their hearts and spirits to do this. The more we decrease the volume of our unhealthy narrative, which, neurobiologically speaking, is a creation of our limbic system, the more we will hear this sublime call on ourselves to rise up to the blatant expression of our greatest genius. This is true whether you're a supervisor within a large organization, a programmer in a small cubicle, a teacher in a school, or a chef in a restaurant. You absolutely have the capacity to lift your work to the level of artistry and have an impact for the betterment of humanity. And yet we resign our lives to apathy because of this faulty perception of who we truly are and what we can really accomplish, staying violently stuck in half-alive lives. And here's the really big idea. As we betray our true power, a part of us starts to die, noted the billionaire.
Dramatic insight, acknowledged the artist. I seriously need to make some massive changes. I'm tired of feeling tired and neglecting my creative abilities. I'm beginning to get that I'm special.
You are, affirmed the entrepreneur. You are, she repeated, in a voice of tenderness.
I'm also starting to see that I care too much about what others think. Some of my friends make fun of my paintings, and they say I'm a screwball behind my back. I'm realizing they just don't understand me and my vision for my art.
Many of the great geniuses of the world were not appreciated until decades after they died, you know? The billionaire offered in a murmur. And on your point about your friends, I'm not so sure you're surrounding yourself with the right ones. And maybe now it's time to do you rather than limiting your talent and aliveness because you are seduced by the opinions of others. Kurt Cobain said it better than I ever could. I was tired of pretending that I was someone else just to get along with people, just for the sake of having friendships. Was the artist's only response. What I'm sharing is accurate. We become our associations. And you'll never have a positive influence in your field and make a beautiful life if you hang with negative people, continued the billionaire. Oh, and that pain I was just speaking of, if not attended to and released, starts to form a deep reservoir of fear and self-hatred within us. Most of us don't have the awareness or possess the tools to process through this well of suppressed anguish. Most of us are unconscious to this quiet torment created by the disrespect we have shown to our promise. And so, we deny it if someone even suggests it. We flee from it when presented with an opportunity to manifest it. And we subconsciously develop a series of soul-crushing escape routes to avoid feeling this pain generated by our talents denied. Like what? Quizzed the entrepreneur. Addictions. Like constantly checking for messages or scanning for likes. Or spending vast chunks of our daily lives watching too much television. TV shows have become so superb these days. It's so easy to get hooked. And when one episode ends, on some viewing platforms, the next one begins automatically. Many among us also make flights from their greatness by chatting and gossiping endlessly, not really understanding that there's a staggering difference between being busy and being productive. High-impact performers and genuine world-builders aren't very available to whoever seeks their attention and demands their time. They're hard to reach, waste few moments, and are far more focused on doing real work versus artificial work. So they deliver the breathtaking results that advance our world. Other avoidance tactics from the pain of potential unexpressed are hours mindlessly surfing online, electronic shopping, working too much, drinking too much, eating too much, complaining too much, and sleeping too much. The tycoon sipped from his water bottle. Another fishing boat motored by. The woman who captained it waved to Mr. Riley, who bowed mightily in reply. The Spellbinder calls this whole phenomenon learned victimhood, the billionaire carried on in a wonderfully exuberant way. As we leave our youth, there's a pull toward complacency. We can start to coast, settle for what's familiar, and lose the juicy desire to expand our frontiers. We adopt the paradigm of a victim. We make excuses and then recite them so many times, we train our subconscious mind to think they are true. We blame other people and outer conditions for our struggles, and we condemn past events for our private wars. We grow cynical and lose the curiosity, wonder, compassion, and innocence we knew as kids. We become apathetic, critical, hardened. Within this personal ecosystem the majority of us create for ourselves, mediocrity then becomes acceptable. And because this mindset is running within us each day, the viewpoint seems so very real to us. We truly believe that the story we are running reveals the truth because we're so close to it. So rather than showing leadership in our fields, owning our crafts by producing dazzling work and handcrafting delicious lives, we resign ourselves to average. See how it all happens? Yes, at least it's all becoming clearer. So the key is to re-script our personal story, right? Inquired the entrepreneur. Absolutely, confirmed the billionaire. Every time you become aware of yourself dropping into victim mode and make a more courageous choice, you rewrite the narrative. You raise your self-identity, elevate your self-respect, and enrich your self-confidence. Each time you vote for your superior self, you starve your weaker side and feed your inherent power. And as you do this with the consistency demanded by mastery, your capitalization IQ, that is your ability to materialize whatever gifts you've been born with, will only grow. The billionaire invited his two students to move to the terrace of his home to continue the morning's lesson on the four focuses of history makers. History maker focus number two,
freedom from distraction. The billionaire pointed to the model with a pinky finger.
Remember that important brain tattoo of successful people? An addiction to distraction is the death of your creative production. It will guide us through this section of today's mentoring session, and I've decided to go deep into the importance of winning the war against diversion and cyber nuisances, because it's an extremely serious issue in our culture. In some ways, the new technologies and social media are not only eroding the Everests of our glorious productive potential, they're also training us to be less human. We have fewer real conversations, fewer true connections, and fewer meaningful interactions. Yes. I'm realizing this more and more as the mornings pass on this beach, admitted the entrepreneur. Filling valuable hours with meaningless moves is the drug of choice for most people, the billionaire continued. Intellectually, we know we shouldn't be wasting time on zero-value activities. But emotionally, we just can't beat the temptation. We just can't fight the hook. This behavior is costing organizations billions of dollars in lost productivity and deficient quality. And as I suggested earlier, people are making more mistakes in their work than ever before because they aren't present to what they're doing. Their precious concentration has been hijacked by a foolish use of technology, and their priceless focus has been kidnapped, costing them their chance to create their best work and calibrate their finest lives. The stillness and quietude that only the day's earliest hours provide was still evident. The industrialist paused. He scanned the entire scene, gazing at the flowers neatly ordered around his home, then at the cargo ships on the horizon that looked like they hadn't moved, and finally at the ocean.
"Look, cats," he said at last, "I love the modern world. I really do. Without all the technology we have available to us, life would be a lot harder. My businesses wouldn't be as successful as they are. I wouldn't be as efficient as I am, and I possibly wouldn't be here with you two."
"Why?" wondered the artist, as a single dolphin swam by gracefully. Astoundingly, it then soared high out of the ocean and spun in the air 4 times, before returning to the water with a lavish splash. Mr. Riley looked delighted.
"I'm so happy I discovered how to become a magnet for miracles," he whispered to himself. "And I can't wait to teach these good folks how to do the same for themselves."
He then kept on with his discourse.
"All the innovations in healthcare tech saved my life when I was sick," the billionaire explained. "Anywho, technology well used is a phenomenal thing. It's all the silly ways people apply it now that really concerns me. So many potentially outstanding people are suffering from broken focus syndrome because they fill their professional and personal lives with so many gadgets, interruptions, and cyber noise. If you're in the sport of winning, please model all of the great masters of history and strip away all the layers of complexity from your days. Simplify, streamline everything, become a purist. Less really is more. Concentrate on just a few work projects so you make them amazing, versus diluting your attention on too many. And socially, have fewer friends but go deep with them so the relationship is rich. Accept fewer invitations, major in fewer leisure activities, and study, then master, a smaller number of books versus skimming many. An intense concentration only on what matters most is how the pros realize victory. Simplify, simplify, simplify. Stop managing your time and start managing your focus," added the billionaire. "Now there's a principle for greatness in this overstimulated society we live in."
"Thanks to your teaching so far," said the artist, "I now understand that being busy doesn't mean you're being productive. I've also come to see that when I work on a new painting, the closer I get to great art, the more some darker part of me wants to get me distracted so that I avoid doing something mind-blowing. It happens fairly often now that I think about it. I'll get nearer to fantastic work, and I then begin to break my work routine. I'll go online and just surf. I'll sleep later and watch entire seasons of my favorite shows, or play video games with my virtual friends all night. Sometimes, I'll just drink too much cheap red wine.
The closer you get to your genius, the more you'll face the sabotage of your fears, agreed the billionaire powerfully. You'll become scared of leaving the majority and having to deal with the byproducts of mastery, like being different from most people, jealousy from competitors, and the pressure to make your next project even better. As you rise toward virtuosity, you'll become anxious about failure, threatened by a concern of not being good enough and insecure about blazing new paths. So your amygdala, an almond-shaped mass of gray matter in the brain that detects fear, gets all fired up, and you begin to tear down the productivity you've built up. We all have a subconscious saboteur that lurks within our weakest selves, you know? The good news is that once you become aware of this condition,
I can make the better daily choices that will give me better daily results, the artist interrupted, with all the energy of a puppy seeing its owner after a long day alone.
Exactly, said the billionaire. Once you are aware of the fact that as you near your highest talents and most luminous gifts, the scared side of you will rear its ugly head and try to mess up the masterpieces you've been creating by pursuing every distraction and escape route possible to avoid finishing. You can manage that self-destructive behavior. You can step outside of it. You can disempower it simply by watching its attempts to denounce your mastery.
Really profound insights here, contributed the entrepreneur. This explains so much about why I'm limiting my productivity, performance, and influence at my company. I'll set an important target. I get the team enrolled in it. We sequence the key deliverables. Then I get distracted. I'll say yes to another opportunity that adds more complexity to our business. I'll fill my days with useless meetings with people who love to hear the sound of their own voice. I'll check my notifications obsessively and watch breaking news reports religiously. This morning it's become super clear how I'm totally sabotaging my effectiveness. It's also pretty obvious that I am addicted to the digital nonsense you're speaking about. I'll be honest, I haven't gotten over some of my exes because it's so easy to watch their lives on social media. I'm understanding now that a lot of the hours I could be super creative, I trade for online recreation. Like you said, Mr. Riley, it's a form of escape. I can't seem to stop shopping on my devices. It's just too easy. And it makes me feel happy for a few minutes. I'm getting why Steve Jobs didn't give his kids the very things he sold to the world. He understood how addictive they could be if improperly used, and how they could make us less human and less alive. The billionaire raised a hand. Another assistant sprinted from the beach hut up to the now sun-soaked terrace. He wore a crisp white shirt, charcoal gray sailing shorts, and well-cared-for black leather sandals.
"Here you are, sir," the young man said with a French accent, as he handed the mogul a tray with mysterious markings on it. In the center was a model of the human brain.
"Merci beaucoup, Pierre.
Now, let's explore the neuroscience of self-sabotage so you cats can understand it better, and then beat it. Remember, each of us has what the Spellbinder calls the ancient brain. This is made up of the limbic system, a set of brain structures that sit on both sides of the thalamus, right under the cerebrum. The amygdala that I mentioned a few moments ago is part of this. This basic and lower functioning brain served to keep us safe thousands of years ago in a primitive world of relentless threats like starvation, temperature extremes, warring tribes, and saber-toothed tigers. It functions to do one main thing: maintain a steady state while warning us against dangers so we survive and propagate our species. With me so far? Asked the billionaire politely.
Understood. The entrepreneur and the artist responded in unison, as a housekeeper served fresh lemon tea with some chunks of ginger in it.
Excellent. One of the fascinating traits of our ancient brain is its negativity bias. To keep us safe, it's far less interested in what's positive in our environment and significantly more invested in letting us know what's bad. This brain's default is to hunt for danger, the billionaire continued happily. So back when life was much more brutal, we could respond swiftly and stay alive. That mechanism served our ancestors exceedingly well. But in today's world, most of us don't face death daily. The reality is that the ordinary person lives a higher quality life than most members of royalty did, even just a few hundred years ago. Please think about this blessing. The tycoon slurped some tea. And yet, because of this built-in negativity bias within our ancient brains, we're constantly scanning for breaches against our security. We're in hyper-vigilance mode, mostly anxious and uptight, even when everything's going great. Fascinating, right? Explains a lot of why we think the way we do, noted the entrepreneur as she too enjoyed the tea. Now I see why I always seem to feel I've never achieved enough, even though I've accomplished more than anyone I know, the entrepreneur carried on. I have such a successful business, a robust net worth, and before my investors got greedy, a fairly wonderful life. Yet despite everything I have, my brain seems to always focus on what I'm missing, where I don't have enough, and how I'm falling short of expectations around winning. Drives me crazy. I hardly feel any peace. Ever. The entrepreneur crossed her arms. The artist blew her a kiss as his dreadlocks dangled in the fragrant breeze. Theodore Roosevelt said something I think it's important you hear, expounded the billionaire. What did he say? Inquired the entrepreneur, her arms clenched tightly. Comparison is the thief of joy, responded the billionaire. Someone will always have more fortune, fame, and stuff than you do. Think about my earlier point about detachment and embracing the wisdom of knowing when enough is enough. Yes, I remember, said the entrepreneur courteously. More and more of this hunger you have comes from deeper feelings of scarcity, and a lot of this is stemming from the workings of your ancient brain. It's scanning your environment and the negativity bias is being activated, preventing you from enjoying all the good you have. Okay, said the billionaire. Let's go even more granular. As time advanced, our brains evolved, and the prefrontal cortex developed. This is the part of our brain responsible for higher thinking. Neuroscientists consider it the crown jewel of advanced reasoning. The Spellbinder calls it the mastery brain. But here's the thing. As we begin to dream bigger, learn quicker, and raise our levels of creativity, productivity, and performance, the ancient brain and the mastery brain began a conflict. They went to war. The primitive brain senses our growth, knows we're leaving our safe harbor of the known, and gets fired up because we're leaving our traditional ways of being. It senses the threat, even though the threat is essential to our personal ascension and professional advancement. We absolutely must venture into those unexplored places where possibility lives, to become more intimate with our primal genius and to become all we are meant to be. Knowing we have higher reaches of talent and courage left to visit floods a human heart with immense excitement. This knowledge is one of the vast treasures that make life worth living. The celebrated psychologist Abraham Maslow once stated, "If you plan on being anything less than who you are capable of being, you will probably be unhappy all the days of your life." But the amygdala kicks into high gear as we exit what's familiar and try something new. The vagus nerve gets provoked, the fear hormone cortisol gets released, and we begin to destroy the very intentions and implementations that our mastery brain so intelligently wants us to realize.
This explains why so few people are highly creative and extremely productive, the artist observed. As we leave our comfort zones, the ancient brain gets triggered. As we raise our expertise and lift our influence, it gets frightened by the change.
Exactly, applauded Mr. Riley. Then cortisol is released, our perception narrows, our breathing grows shallow, and we drop into fight or flight mode. Actually, the three options of fear are flight, fight, or freeze. The artist added,
our higher thinking wants us to grow, evolve, do more masterful work, lead better lives, and inspire the world, continued the artist. But there's a battle of our brains going on,
and the ancient, lower, more primitive brain inside all of us wants to stop our evolution.
Exactly, said the billionaire as he fist-bumped the painter.
And so, speaking to the second focus of history makers on the model you're walking us through, freedom from distraction, I guess it's because of this fear we face that we embrace as many diversions as possible to make us feel better, even if only for a minute, questioned the entrepreneur.
Truth, confirmed the billionaire,
and to escape the discomfort that comes with us becoming more intimate with our inherent genius.
This is such a big piece for me. The artist couldn't contain his enthusiasm. You've just walked us through why our culture is so addicted to distractions, and why the majority don't experience their greatness. And I guess that's why creative and productive people are the real warriors of our society. We not only have to face the insults of our naysayers and the arrows of those critics who don't understand our art, we also need to have the guts to push past the alarm bells of our ancient brains, pleading with us not to reach for our brilliance.
Poetically said, my friend, exclaimed the billionaire gleefully. He did that little dance again.
The housekeeper, who was sweeping the veranda, just shook her head.
It takes an awesome amount of courage to feel the terror of true personal and professional growth, and to keep going, even when you sort of feel you're dying, taught the Titan. But continuing when you're frightened is how you become a legend. You two cats are makers, builders of great things, and all builders consistently break through their fear, daily, to find higher levels of prowess, impact, and human freedom. Oh, and the fantastic reward you'll receive as you fully express your strengths and gifts isn't only the product of your heroic efforts. It's who you'll become by advancing through the fire of your fears and the heat of your trials along the process to mastery. You get to know who you are. You see your abilities more clearly. Your confidence soars. You need the stroking of the crowd a lot less. And you begin to live your authentic life versus a plastic one, manufactured by a world that doesn't want you to be free.
The billionaire sipped from his water bottle before continuing to explain the importance of breaking free from the death grip of device distraction and digital diversions.
And that's where being a member of the 5 a.m. Club can also work its magic for you, he told his audience of two. One of the ways the great men and women of the world avoided complexity was by incorporating tranquility and serenity into the front part of their days. This beautiful discipline gave them absolutely essential time away from overstimulation to savor life itself, replenish their creative reservoirs, develop their supreme selves, count their blessings, and ground the virtues that they would then live out their days under. Many of the people who fueled the progress of our civilization shared the habit of rising before daybreak.
Could you name a few of those people? Quizzed the entrepreneur.
John Grisham, the famous novelist, for one, replied the billionaire. Other celebrated early risers include Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, Georgia O'Keeffe, Frank Lloyd Wright, and Ernest Hemingway, who said that early in the morning there is no one to disturb you, and it is cool or cold, and you come to your work and warm as you write.
Beethoven rose at dawn, said the artist.
The great ones all spent a lot of time alone, offered the billionaire. Solitude, the kind that you can access before the sun comes up, is a force multiplier around your power, expertise, and connection to being human. And your escalation requires your isolation. See, you can be in the world all day long chatting endlessly on your phone about 1,000 senseless things. Or you can change the world by exploiting your talent, refining your skills, and being a light of upliftment that raises us all. But you can't do both. Princeton psychologist Eldar Shafir has used the term cognitive bandwidth to explain the point that we have a limited amount of mental capacity when we rise each morning. And as we give our attention to numerous influences, ranging from the news, messages and online platforms to our families, our work, our fitness, and our spiritual lives, we leave bits of our focus on each activity we pursue, massively important insight to consider. No wonder most of us have trouble concentrating on important tasks by noon. We've spent our bandwidth. Sophie Leroy, a business professor at the University of Minnesota, calls the concentration we deposit on distraction and other stimuli attention residue. She's found that people are far less productive when they are constantly interrupting themselves by shifting from one task to another throughout the day, because they leave valuable pieces of their attention on too many different pursuits. The solution is exactly what I'm suggesting. Work on one high-value activity at a time, instead of relentlessly multitasking, and do so in a quiet environment. Albert Einstein made the point exquisitely when he wrote, "Only one who devotes himself to a cause with his whole strength and soul can be a true master." For this reason, mastery demands all of a person. This really is one of the most closely guarded secrets of the virtuosos and history makers. They don't diffuse their cognitive bandwidth. They don't dilute their creative gifts, chasing every shiny diversion and every attractive opportunity that comes their way. No, instead, they exercise the fierce discipline required to do only a few things, but at an absolutely world-class level. It's like I said before, the great ones understand that it's far smarter to create one piece of art, a genuine masterpiece, that endures for generations, rather than thousands of projects that express no genius. And please also remember, the hours that the 95% waste, the top 5% treasure. 5 a.m. is the time of least distraction, highest human glory, and greatest peace. So, leverage the victory hour well. You'll make quantum leaps in your productivity, as well as in your personal mastery. I don't want to get too much further into the neuroscience I've shared this morning, and I have an amazing surprise planned. But there is one more concept that I'd love to share with you too. It's called transient hypofrontality.
Transient what-a-what-a? Queried the artist as he laughed.
The billionaire walked over to a towering palm tree with a thick trunk revealing its vast age. A sun-bleached wooden table with a wide circular top sat under it. A model had been meticulously carved into the wood. You would have been most impressed and fascinated if you saw it. The magnate cleared his throat and chugged some of the lemon tea. After a few seconds, he began to gargle. Yes, gargle. Then he carried on his discourse. When you're up early and all alone, away from the overstimulation and noise, your attention isn't being fragmented by technology, meetings, and other forces that can limit maximum productivity, mused the billionaire. And so the prefrontal cortex, that part of your brain responsible for rational thinking, as well as constant worrying, actually shuts off for a short time. Lovely information, right? That's the transient part of transient hypofrontality. It happens only temporarily. Your nonstop analyzing, ruminating, and stressful overthinking stops. You pause from trying to figure everything out and being so concerned about things that will probably never happen. Your brain waves actually shift from their usual beta to alpha, and sometimes even down into theta state. The solitude, silence, and stillness of daybreak also triggers the production of neurotransmitters like dopamine, the inspirational fuel that serves super producers so well, and serotonin, the beautiful pleasure drug of the brain. Automatically and naturally, you enter what I described earlier as the flow state. Mr. Riley waved his left hand over the diagram on the table. Entitled The Secret of Morning Genius, it is reproduced on the enhancement. The flow state is the peak mindset that all exceptionalists like top violinists, iconic athletes, elite chefs, brilliant scientists, empire-building entrepreneurs, and legendary leaders inhabit when they produce their finest product, the industrialist added enthusiastically. When you give yourself the gift of some morning peace away from your busyness, the hardwired capacity of every human brain to access the realm of pure genius becomes activated. The excellent news for you two cats is that with the right moves, you can habituate this state of awesome performance so it shows up with absolute predictability. Transient hypofrontality, a very helpful model, declared the entrepreneur as she gingerly placed her phone into her shorts.
The entire world would transform if people knew this information, pronounced the artist.
They should be teaching all this to kids in schools, the entrepreneur suggested.
So true, agreed the billionaire. But again, I need to give all the credit for this philosophy I'm sharing with you, and the transformational methodology that I'll soon walk you through so you implement all this potent information, to the Spellbinder. He's been my greatest teacher, and with zero doubt, the finest human being I know. Ingenuity without integrity isn't so impressive to me. Unusual accomplishment free of uncommon compassion is senseless. And yes, if every person on the planet was educated in this material, and then they had the commitment to apply it, the entire world would be advanced. Because each of us would own and then live our latent power to realize extraordinary results and rise into completely glorious people.